I was pregnant with Dali when we got the epilepsy diagnosis for Jaylee. And I remember asking the neurologist, do I need to worry? And he's like, oh, no, you don't need to worry about that. And anyway, when Dali was born, she hit most of her milestones in the first 12 months of life. And then I saw at 13 months old, I saw the little eyelid flutters. She was already very active. She was babbling. She was doing all the things she should have been doing. Mm-hmm. And then I saw the eyelid flutters mm-hmm. and my heart just sank, because I knew at that moment exactly what was in store for her and us. And that was honestly one of the worst days of my life.
Hello and welcome to SynGap One Stories, hosted by me, Ashley Fry. Every couple of weeks, I spread information and awareness about a rare disease that affects my son Nathan. It's called SynGap One. I chat with parents, siblings, caregivers, and others about the challenges and successes of their journey with someone impacted by SynGap One. I hope you enjoy today's conversation. Hello, everybody. I am joined today by Danielle, who lives in Melbourne, Australia, which, for those of you not up to date on your Australia geography, it is at the southernmost point tip. And surprisingly enough, okay, so we all know that the seasons are different in the US and across the world. So they're in winter right now, but year round, what I understand is it's just much, much colder than Australia. Most of us think it's like this hot desert and there's nothing else going on, but you're actually in wintertime and it's cold in Melbourne most of the year. Is that right?
Well, it does get very hot in summer. So it gets up to above 90 or 100. But winter, it can get cold, very cold. In fact, we drive 3 hours and there's snow in winter.
Oh my gosh, that's pretty cool. Wow, that's really cool. Okay, so Danielle and I are going to chat today. She is our very first interviewee from abroad, not even across the pond. We skipped a few ponds to catch her today. I met Danielle at our first annual SRF conference in Nashville in 2022, and we had a fabulous time together. I can't remember the last time I have laughed so much than I was with her and some of her friends at dinner. We had one of the best times. It was really nice to just chat with somebody who is very fun and energetic and has a great personality. This is also one of the reasons why I am such a big proponent about meeting other SynGap families, because we have so much to talk about. We have so much in common, but we can kind of let our hair down in a way that most other people don't understand. Mm. And I think that's probably why I really connected with you, Danielle, right off the bat, is because you're just very down to earth and like, okay, what do we need to do? And then when we were having fun, it's like, we're going to have all of the fun and we're going to enjoy this moment.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that so much.
Well, there was some line dancing involved. So, I mean, how can you not have fun when line dancing is involved?
That's true. I almost forgot about that. There was line dancing. I remember specifically Mike and Virginie had a blast with it, and I was just too entertained by everybody to try and make a fool of myself, but I had a really good time watching everybody else.
It was great.
Okay, so for those of you who haven't had the opportunity to get to know Danielle and her family yet, I am going to floor you, because I was floored when I learned this about Danielle. She has two daughters who have SynGap, and their names are Jaylee, yes, and Dali.
Got it.
Oh, I got it. I got the pronunciations correct. Danielle, tell me a little bit about your girls.
So Jaylee is 13 and Dali's 11. They've both got the same mutation, SynGap mutation. So they're similar in some ways. However, there's a lot of other things at play, which you see, because they're very different little girls. So their personalities and the other genetic makeup really influences the elements of the SynGap symptoms that come to the fore. So one is Jaylee's very, she's the eldest, she's compliant, she's a good girl, she'll do what you mm-hmm. ask her to do. And then she will sometimes lose it, but 99% of the time she's very happy and compliant. And she's much more severe as far as the seizures go. And sleep, she didn't sleep for 10 years. And then Dali is less severe she's not had severe seizures. However, she has a high frequency of seizures. So she's got a lot of eyelid flutters, but never multiple drops like Jaylee had, or clusters, never had any of that. So much milder, more her intellectual disability is not as severe. She's more coordinated, but she has an autism diagnosis, and she is basically oppositional. So cheeky. Both of them gorgeous. So affectionate and loving and always want hugs. But you ask Dali to stand up, she'll sit down. You ask her to turn around, she'll go the other way. You say we're taking a nappy off, she'll put it on. She's literally so playful and cheeky. She's a handful behaviorally. But she understands everything. Man. She just chooses to do the opposite. So, yeah, right. Very different girls.
I think many of us know children, and, you know, being a sibling, I have a younger sister and we are very much the same way. Like one of us is, I'm not going to tell you which one, one of us is very good and does everything she's told all the time.
Sounds like you, Ashley.
Wild. I'm going to let you guess which one is me. No, but I mean, that's interesting to hear that Singapian siblings are, I mean, the same, like, yes. I mean, yes, they still have their personalities.
Absolutely. And that's one of the biggest lessons for me. I mean, in the community, we're all super keen to find out who's got the exact same mutation. Well, I can tell you I've got two with the exact same mutation, and they are wildly different. So it's not just about
that's
the mutation.
So interesting.
There's a lot more at play.
I'm interested that's intriguing also because you said that their seizure types are different too. And most people, when they talk about the mutation that their Singapian has and where on the exome it is, if it's, you know, at the beginning or if it's toward the end, the beginning is usually more mild seizures or more mild presentation. And toward the end of the sequence is much more severe presentation of seizures and everything else. And so that's so interesting that two biological siblings that have the exact same SYNGAP mutation have vastly different seizure presentations.
Yeah, they both have had similar seizures before. However, because Jaylee's are more severe, she has clusters and she's had a tonic-clonic at the end, a very short 20-second tonic-clonic, but she's had tonic-clonics at the end of a jerk and a drop, whereas Dali's only ever had a few drops, as in atonic drops, and she just has of the eyelid flutters. So yeah, they have similar seizures, but severity is very different.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have they both been sequenced genetically? Do they have anything else going on?
We've done whole genome sequencing for the whole family, which is actually how we got the diagnosis, because it wasn't picked up through normal exome sequencing. So we've had whole genome sequencing and there's nothing else identified in them that's of significance. So it's purely SYNGAP and all the impacts of that one little protein and the havoc it wreaks on the body.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow. So in your family, so your whole family had a whole genome sequencing. Mm-hmm. So you and your spouse, everybody, so Danielle sometimes goes by Danny and her spouse happens to also be named Danny. So I'm going to try my hardest to confuse everybody today. So you and your spouse were sequenced as well. Were you guys carriers No. was there any indication that it was not de novo?
So no, there wasn't. So what I realized through this process is that we all have different DNA in our somatic cells. So the cells where you give a blood test compared to your reproductive cells, which are your egg or sperm, depending on if you're a man or a woman. So the theory, because neither my husband or I have the mutation in our somatic cells, the theory is that one of us carries the mutation in our egg or sperm. That's the explanation.
Oh,
so it's still de novo. It was de novo in one of us.
Okay.
When the eggs or sperm developed, that was the de novo mutation. That's when it was developed at that point. So we are carriers in a way. However, firstly, we don't know which one of us it is. We don't want to know. And we've gone to lengths not to know. And so we know we are a carrier. And one of the first things our neurologist said to us when we got the diagnosis is, you can now have a third child, and we can, through IVF, we can make sure that they don't have SYNGAP. And my husband and I looked at each other. We hadn't slept in like 6 years at that point. We said, there's no way we could handle another child. We just couldn't. I want to have it in me. I just don't. We're maxed out. So,
I bet. Yeah. Well, two kids, 2 years apart, neurotypical kids is difficult. I cannot imagine, and I feel for you, how hard it must be with two SYNGAPians. Mm. Are they close? Are they very friendly? Do they love each other and they're just each other's person?
I wish. Yeah, I wish that was the case. I mean, we don't really allow it. And the reason is that the eldest can bite. So when she gets frustrated, she can bite. And the fact that the youngest, and both of them, in fact, have a high pain threshold, we don't actually know what's going on until it's too late. So we can't leave them in a room together by themselves. We can't do that. So they can be close to each other, but it's got to be moderated. There's got to be someone intervening if, you know, that 1% of the time Jaylee loses it and goes to bite Darling. She has. She's bitten her on the face before. I mean, I remember one of the times I was devastated. Darlie was bleeding on the cheek, and we had some people looking after them at the time, and they just left them in a room together. And it was a big lesson. You can't do it. So we make sure they kiss each other goodnight every night before bed. And, you know, there's some orchestrated closeness. But unfortunately, we're not at that point where we can just have more spontaneous closeness. Hopefully in the future we can do that.
Yeah. Wow. So you said that as your family went through the whole genome process, that's when you found the diagnosis. When was that? When was that in your lives, their lives?
Oh, I remember the date. I remember where we were, who told us. I remember every detail about that day. It was it was in February in 2016, and we'd requested whole genome sequencing. And back in 2016 in Australia, we actually were guinea pigs with whole genome sequencing. It was not commercially available, so we'd sourced the one. Machine in the country, and we'd begged a geneticist to do it for us. So we'd agreed to pay initially for it, but we ended up launching, speaking at the launch of this new genome sequencing company. But that was back in 2016, and I remember when they told us, it was just, for us, I think there's something to be said about at what age and what experiences you've had with your child when you get the diagnosis, and how that then impacts how you process it. So what I've seen in my experience is people who have had some hard years with their child, you've been in the unknown, you've had some medical complexities, you're thinking the worst in your mind, that little voice in your head is saying, this could be life limiting. You don't know what's going on here. You could be dealing with early childhood death. You don't know what's going on. And if you've had those experiences, when you get the SYNGAP diagnosis, I think you're grateful, because you find out that it's not necessarily life limiting from a health perspective. And you're then grateful that you don't have to worry about that. And that's how I felt at the time. Although when we got our diagnosis back in February 2016, there was not a lot of information about SYNGAP available. There was a few papers, and not scientific journals. These were just marketing type materials. So, like, I remember I think it was called Rare X, Rebecca's daughter Autumn was written up, and I remember reading about them. They were the first case I'd seen, and then I spoke to a few families, and that feeling you mentioned before about feeling like you're connected to this community, I had it immediately. It was amazing.
Yeah. At the time, okay, so tell me how old the girls were at diagnosis.
They were 5 and 7.
Okay. Yeah. And so you had been in it for you'd been in it for a long time.
I mean, Jaylee was 13 months old. We'd moved from London back to Melbourne, and so none of the little milestones that were missed raised red flags for us. I mean, we had little flags, right, but no major red flags, and it was our first, so we didn't really think too much of it. And then at around the 13, 14, 15 month mark, we saw my husband notice the eyelid flutters, very subtle, mild. I didn't notice them. He noticed them, and he suspected seizure activity, and we took her to a pediatrician who just dismissed us. First time neurotic parents, go home, come back in 3 months if you've still got a problem. And we actually heard that if you take a child with suspected seizures to the emergency room in a hospital, they have to do an EEG. They're obliged. So that's what we did. We took her to the hospital.
Oh, that's so smart.
And we got the diagnosis of epilepsy. So that's why that's our kind of primary diagnosis was epilepsy. So we kind of joined that epilepsy community really quickly, and genetic epilepsy community. Now we're very big advocates in Australia in that community because of that association, and for us, the affinity to epilepsy. So we got that diagnosis. So for a few months, we thought that explained all of the delays. Just thinking, oh, it's because she's got seizures. And obviously we tried all the medications and went through 20 different medications that didn't work. But we thought that that was the cause. And then a little niggle in my mind was saying, there's no way that epilepsy could be the cause of all these things. It doesn't make sense. So we kept thinking there's more to this, and we tried to get the genetic testing. We did. We got exome sequencing, and it actually came back with nothing. And I think, SYNGAP was on the panel back then. However, they wrote up a paper that the method they were using to test for two children was flawed because they'd excluded anything they both had. So after our experience, they did write a paper, and they've changed their exome sequencing methodology. But hey, someone's gotta be the first.
So we
didn't get the SYNGAP diagnosis, and we didn't get any diagnosis initially. So we were just waiting, and then eventually, and then we had Dali. I was pregnant with Dali when we got the epilepsy diagnosis for Jaylee. And I remember asking the neurologist, do I need to worry? And he's like, oh, no, you don't need to worry about that. And anyway, when Dali was born, she hit most of her milestones in the first 12 months of life.
When I
saw at 13 months old, I saw the little eyelid flutters. She was already very active. She was babbling. She was doing all the things she should have been doing. Mm-hmm. And then I saw the eyelid flutters and my heart just sank. Because I knew at that moment exactly what was in store for her and us. And that was honestly one of the worst days of my life.
Oh my gosh. And so you didn't have to take her to the hospital, and you went to the pediatrician at that point?
I can't remember what we did at that point. We have a neurologist, we have a pediatrician.
But you still didn't have the SYNGAP diagnosis at that.
Not for 4 years later.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Yeah, my heart goes to you. As hard as it is to hear it once, I can't even put myself in a place where I had to hear it twice.
Yeah. I mean, those early years I explain it as we were just under a dark cloud, because we weren't Jaylee wasn't sleeping. She would have these 2-hour screaming fits twice a day, once in the middle of the night, once during the day. Literally, you could not console her. And she was going through lots of different medications that weren't working. In fact, the first one caused toxicity in her. So the first one, Epilum or sodium valproate, that was 3 months later, she was like a zombie. Wouldn't get up, was horizontal, and I just called the pediatrician and said, what can I do? This is not right. My daughter, sure, she's not having seizures. She's not doing anything. She's horizontal. This is not cool. So we got a hospital admission. So we were going through all of that. Actually, when I was breastfeeding Dali, I was in hospital with Jaylee because we were weaning her off the sodium valproate and getting her onto, it was, I think, phenytoin or Dilantin at that point. So it was, yeah, mm-hmm. I remember the hospital machine of when, because I was breastfeeding, I had to use this big hospital machine because I couldn't have Dali in the hospital with me as well. So, oh, those years, dark, very, very dark years. Yeah, the expressing element of it was full on.
Oh my
gosh. And I feel like now.
How did.
Sorry, you go.
Oh, no, please you.
I feel like things have completely changed now. We feel like we're no longer under that dark cloud just because the girls have grown a lot. They're a little bit more independent, not too much, but we have the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. We know what to expect from them. Mm-hmm. Their seizures are relatively controlled, not completely, but relatively controlled. And the biggest difference, the biggest change for us is sleep. Our eldest, who didn't sleep for 10 years, Jaylee, she now sleeps. So I cannot tell you. For 10 years, we got used to just operating on no more than 2 hours of continuous sleep a night. For 10 years. So we just got used to it. It's astounding.
I don't know how can you get used to that?
Well, I didn't have a choice.
I guess. Were you working at the time?
Yep. Yep.
Oh my gosh. You know what
they say, ask a busy person to do something. Because, I mean, I think if I hadn't have worked, I would have just fallen in a heap.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I've got a couple of questions about all of this. It had to have been something more than just the sleep that brought you out from under that dark cloud. What else did you do? Did you and Danny do for each other to get through that period?
So we're quite disciplined now in taking care of ourselves. So every week and every year, we make sure that we have time together as a couple. Time together as a family and time by ourselves individually. So that we do on a weekly basis. We have a schedule where each of us has an exercise schedule. We go out for breakfast once a week. On the Saturday morning, we get respite for a few hours and Danny and I go for breakfast and then we go to the supermarket. But that's what we do in our respite time. And then we have the rest of the weekend as a family. But we're very strict on that. Nice. And then we're strict on holidays as well. So we always, the biggest benefit of a holiday, I think, is looking forward to it. It's even more beneficial than the actual holiday because so the longer, the further out you have a holiday booked, I think the greatest value. So we always have family holidays booked and then we also go away just the two of us. Just for a few days because it's just you need that recharge time because it's a stressful existence. Every little thing with a SYNGAP child is intense. You can't do anything easily and I think if you don't stop and take the time to connect with people who are helping you, even if it's not your partner, even if it's a parent or a sibling or whoever it may be, I think you'll lose yourselves to it.
Mm-hmm. Peter Halliburton mentioned, he put it so well when he said, it's kind of like you're on hyper alertness all the time and that level never comes down and it's just, it wears you thin. It really does. Yeah. So when you and Danny go out of town for a few days, who watches the girls?
So we have a team of support workers. So in Australia, we're pretty lucky. We've got an insurance scheme called the National Disability Insurance Scheme or the NDIS. So we've got a team of support workers. We normally have six at a time, not all at once, but a rotation. And my parents. Mm-hmm. My parents are, I mean, they don't, they unfortunately, as the girls get older, my parents are also getting older. So my girls are getting stronger, but my parents are not getting stronger. The reverse is true. So my parents are struggling physically with the girls at the moment, but they can still oversee things that are going on. And the meds, for example, the meds are very stressful. I find the meds very stressful since the Epilim encounter. It's one of my biggest fears is the medication. So knowing that my parents are across that makes me feel a lot more calm about leaving them for a few days.
Right. Are they on the same medications? I'm guessing
not. They're on a lot of the same medications. However, there's some differences. Mm-hmm. So we had a magic combination of two medicines that stopped the drop seizures. Mm-hmm. And so they're both on that magic combo, but they're also on different medications as well. So Jaylee's also on Fycompa, and Dali takes CBD, and there's one other one that eludes me right now, but there's a few variations, but mostly the base of their schedule is the same.
Okay. Do you guys do keto diets or anything like that?
We did try. We actually tried ketogenic. We tried modified Atkins, and it worked. Mm-hmm. It did work for Jaylee. Mm-hmm. We tried the keto, and it worked for 6 months, and then it stopped working. And then when you're so restricted with what you can do and eat, and it's not working. Obviously, we tried lots of different things. We tried the MCT oils, and we tried the ratio, changing the ratios. But she was in ketosis, but the seizures came back. So it wasn't that we couldn't keep her in ketosis. We could. That was the easy part. But it stopped having that preventative effect on her. So then we stopped. Doing it. And we tried modified Atkins as well, but. Yeah, didn't help.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Yeah.
Do you do the keto?
I feel like we didn't try keto, but I tried a modified Atkins diet. On top of all the other things, I felt like it was so much work, even on modified Atkins, just to portion things correctly and make sure that if he had a snack at daycare or at school that – it wouldn't, you know, that it was going to be in line with what we wanted him to be consuming. Not that people weren't paying attention, but it wasn't a huge priority to everybody other than me and my husband. And ultimately I just felt like it wasn't controlling his seizure activity, although his seizure activity at that time was very minimal. It was, you know, the eye flutters and not much else yet. So when we got him on medications, I said, you know what, this is solving the problem right now and it's so much less work. I'm just going to drop the modified Atkins.
I think you need – that's one thing that I've learned in the journey. You just need to prioritize which battles you fight and how. And the ones that require a lot of effort, you need to work out is the payoff worth the effort? And sometimes it's not.
Yeah. Tell me what the girls' like daily weekday schedule looks like. What do they do?
So they go to the same school. So it's a school for significant health impairments or physical disabilities. So it's interesting because in Australia we could choose to send them to an autism school or to a physical disability school or to a special development school, which is more so for intellectual disabilities. And so we're so blessed. We were lucky we could choose any of those schools
I'm thinking, what would I do with that choice?
We had so many options. So the positive side of SYNGAP, we went with the physical disabilities school and we were worried about how they'd deal with the behavioural elements, but it's turned out to be quite a really good option for us and we're really happy there. So they go every morning at 8 a.m. The bus picks them up from the front door. They get on the bus and then at 4 p.m. the bus drops them back home. So they have a full day at school. They have physios, or you guys call them something else, physical trainers, maybe. They have physios, they have exercise physiologists, they've got occupational therapists, speech therapists, they've got a pool there and libraries, and everything is set up. They've got a nursing, a team of nurses there. So everything's set for them at the school to have a lot of their therapies at the school as well. But we do also do some private therapies with them. So after school, one day a week, they see a speech and a physio.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me what the best thing about raising your girls is.
The best thing, I think it's, and perhaps I'm talking too soon, but so far, it's the affection. It's the cuddles. It's my 13-year-old. I'm looking at my friends with 13-year-olds and they don't want to know them. My 13-year-old wants to hug me. Sure, it has scaled back. Like, she used to always want to be on top of me like a koala bear and a joey. But now she still will cuddle me and wants to hug me and wants me close to her, whereas that doesn't happen with a neurotypical teenager. So that's one good thing.
That's a really good thing.
Another good thing, I think, is appreciation. So I've just learnt gratitude where you can find it. And I remember once I mentioned they go to a school for physical disabilities. So I was at one of their concerts. And Dali, my youngest, hyperactive, running around everywhere. Sure, she can't, like, the kid, she'll run before she stands up. So she's literally running while she's horizontal. So she's not stable, but she is fast. And she doesn't stop.
I know a few of those.
And she doesn't stop. So I'm running around after her, literally 30 minutes. I'm like tearing my hair out. Like, will this kid just be still? Because I'm tired. I'm physically exhausted. And you don't know what she's going to do. Will she run into someone? Will she tear a hat off someone? Right. Will she trip over something? Will she run into the wall? Because she also runs into walls sometimes really fast. So I've got to be close to her. And this goes back to your point before about always being on high alert. You always are. So I was on high alert that day, and I remember thinking I was just exhausted. And I felt some eyes on me, and I looked around, and there was a mum with her son, and he was in a wheelchair. He couldn't move at all, literally had no movement. And I thought, here I am feeling like I'm exhausted because I'm running around after my daughter, and this mum is looking at me, and she just wishes her son could get up and run around, just take a few steps.
Right.
And I felt this just overwhelming sense of gratitude. I've got a little girl who can cuddle me, who can be expressive, and who can run around, and that's a good thing. Sure, she runs too fast and runs into things, so I've got to be a little bit careful, but I'm very grateful for the things they can do, and they can do a lot.
I really love to hear that. Oh, that's great. On the flip side, what's the hardest day-to-day struggle?
That always on element. I mean, especially with two of them, like, you just can never relax. Dali, even if she's in a room by herself, I still can't relax because she's right now into this kind of picking phase. So even if she's in a room just by herself, she will find a part of her body to scratch until it bleeds. And she likes the blood. She likes the sensory element. She creates problems, trouble out of nothing. Mm-hmm. She's quite resourceful. Mm. So that's one of the hardest parts. And also, I think the balancing and prioritizing. So before we touched on the fact that, do we prioritize their behavior, or is it the seizures, or is it the defiance disorder? What is it that I'm going to focus on the most? And then obviously you're going to have guilt about that. So always feeling like you can't do it all, and the decisions you're making and not always the best ones. That's the hardest bit about it, because it's so diverse, SYNGAP. So many symptoms and issues to deal with. You're constantly having to prioritize which is the most important for your family. That's right. Hard.
Hard is putting it lightly, I think. Speaking of prioritizing, how, and you mentioned that you were working when you got the diagnosis and you're running on basically zero sleep. And I know that you work now. Tell me what you do in your life and what your profession is, and tell me how or if your career changed as a result of the SYNGAP diagnoses.
Yeah. Lots of questions there. I'll unbundle them one at a time.
I'll throw them at you.
I think my interests have changed as a result of the diagnosis. So I've got a really strong interest in genetics, genomics, and epilepsy. So we're heavily involved with the Epilepsy Foundation Australia, and we set up a group called the Genetic Epilepsy Team Australia. So I'm very interested in genetics as a result of the girls. Mm-hmm. My profession hasn't really changed, except that I've evolved in my 20-plus year career. So I work for an insurance company. But what I think I'm really aligned to the purpose of my company, which is what keeps me going, actually, because we work on preventing chronic disease or preventing health issues through being active or not being sedentary, or, you know, all the basics, mm-hmm. you know, don't smoke, eat well, exercise enough, mm-hmm. Be careful of your environment, mm-hmm. all those elements that are preventative. And for me, it resonates with me because that's something you can do. I mean, irony is that SYNGAP, there was actually nothing we could have done. So I'm all for controlling the controllables. And so when there are mm-hmm. these preventable, modifiable diseases, we should all be doing something about them, because we know there's a lot of things we can't do anything about right now. So SYNGAP, I'm saying it's not a lost hope, because there's oodles of research going on, and I know there's, you know, maybe 50, 60 research projects all over the world for SYNGAP, but right now, There's nothing we can do about it. So for me, my career is mm-hmm. controlling the controllables and focusing on that. And because in my personal life, I am not in control. I'm not in control of anything in my personal life. I'm literally beholden to SYNGAP.
Yes. Yes, I'm right there with you.
So I work in a strategic role now for an insurance company, and the Vitality is the program I work on, which is this changing behaviors so that you prevent disease.
Oh, that's really inspiring. You might have to send me a job link.
Cool, I will.
Tell me, in the last year, so recently, what is the coolest thing or something that you are most proud of in both Jaylee and Dolly?
Proud. I suppose Jaylee's becoming more independent. And I mentioned before, she's not going through those teenager years. She does have it a little bit. So she's wanting to be by herself a bit in her room and just be on her iPad. So she's developing a little bit in that respect. And she's more capable of communicating to us what she wants. Or perhaps I should flip it and say she's made it easier for us to understand what she wants. So that's good. Dolly, what am I proud of? I'm proud also from a communication perspective. So she has mm-hmm. thousands of words, thousands, but she very rarely loops them together. So she'll say one word or mm-hmm. two words. I mean, I always talk about the example of bedtime routine. She loves dressing up. Both girls love dressing up, but she's got maybe five or six characters, and you don't know which way she's going to go in the evening when she goes to bed. So she might, and she comes up with new things as well. So vampire is one of them. She's got witch, she's got a werewolf, she's got a captain, feather sword, so a pirate. And there's a yes. few others. But the other day she asked for werewolf teeth. I'm like, werewolf teeth? Where do you get this from, kid? We had to go find her. We were worried about her swallowing these teeth. But you know those teeth that you can put in a mouth? We found them. So she got them. So it's, I mean, I'm proud of the girls because whoever they meet, whoever they interact with, they endear themselves to them. They are challenging and hard work, but in equal measure, they are delightful, entertaining, and just endearing. People love them. They fall in love with them. And it's, I know yeah. why, but it's so nice to see other right. people feeling that way as well. That's probably the connection is what I'm most proud about is their ability to connect.
Oh, that makes me really happy. Okay, let's end on a piece of advice to give any Syngap family about how to live a happier life.
What have I learned over the years? I think the most valuable lesson was the fact that you're a family and you should treat them like kids, not just clients of a therapy. So you shouldn't mm-hmm. feel guilty mm-hmm. about doing your certain number of ABA hours or speech therapy or OT or, you know, you shouldn't have them on mm-hmm. a strict routine. They're kids. They want to play. They want love. Right. They want to just be. And for me, mm-hmm. that was the biggest lesson. We were, you know, we had the therapy overload in the early years. And I remember right. a really experienced OT turned around to me one day and said, you know what, you can just take a break. Just stop. Just have a break, have a few mm-hmm. months off, and then reassess and get going again. And it was the best advice ever because what I wow. learned is the incremental improvements. I mean, sometimes there's no improvements. So speech therapy and OT, mm-hmm. very, very hard to see any gains there. But the incremental yep. gains you do see, it's not often worth the investment of your energy and the dynamic change in your family. Do you know what's more yeah. important for them is love and acceptance and feeling yeah. like they've got their mum who's there to cuddle them or play with them and have fun with them or cook with them, you know, just normal type of things, whatever you can do and adapt those principles from the therapies into normal life. I think that was the biggest lesson mm-hmm. that I got.
Oh, that's great advice. I love that. Well, Danielle, I have been smiling ear to ear basically all of the second half of our interview. I know that you are somebody who many of us look up to, and I know that so many people are going to reach out and share how much they learned from you in this podcast. So thank you so much for sharing with me and taking the time away from your day to do this. And I hope one day soon we can see each other again in person.
Absolutely. And can I just say, Ashley, thank you for investing your time and energy into doing this. I think it's really important what you're doing, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, thank you. All right, everybody, we will chat soon. Bye. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and like us wherever you're listening. For more information about today's guest and Syngap One, please check out our show notes. Your suggestions are always welcome. Please email us at ed@curesyngap1.org.